You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Plays it to Reed, swatted out by Lewis, and it starts Austin Wagner on a two-on-none breakaway. Wagner scores!
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings.
More out of the box as Galchenyuk loses the puck. And a steal here from Moore. Trevor Moore to the front. He scores!
Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men, presented by Manscaped, an official partner of the LA Kings. Thanks to this revolutionary company, manscaping accidents are a thing of the past. Just get yourself the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Inside, you'll find products like their Lawnmower 3.0, which is advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't cut you. Everything you need to keep trimmed and smelling nice is in the Perfect Package 3.0. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code KINGSMEN at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com and use the code KINGSMEN. Well, it's Wednesday, Kings fans, so that means it's time to continue our player evaluation series for the 2019-20 season. This week, we're talking about Austin Wagner and Trevor Moore, two players that played together on the third line but may be competing against each other for ice time next season. Austin Wagner, of course, drafted by the Kings in the fourth round back in 2015. Trevor Moore, acquired in the trade that saw Kyle Clifford and Jack Campbell join the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jim Fox and Sean Tierney joined me to talk about the two depth wingers. Well, we're here to talk about Austin Wagner, and joining me for this player evaluation is always Jim Fox. How are you doing today, Jim?
Doing great, Jesse. Thanks very much.
I'm going to throw a ton of numbers at you here, so buckle up. In 2018 and 19, Austin Wagner averaged just under 9 minutes time on ice. He scores 12 goals, 21 points, 16 penalty minutes, and is a plus two. This past season, the 2019-20 season, he adds a few minutes to his game, 11 minutes, 45 seconds time on ice, but he halves his goals and his points, six goals, 11 points, and more than doubles his penalty minutes, 39 penalty minutes, and winds up being a minus five. Plays 735 minutes and 51 seconds for a total of eighth most amongst forwards. He spends 287 of those minutes with Lizotte and Kempe. Now, the reason I point out this particular line is because in the league, lines that play more than 250 minutes or more together, that line ranks fourth in Corsi for, expected goals for, and Fenwick for, but 38.46 in actual goals for. Their Corsi for 59.35%, 60% shots for, 61.68% expected goals for. So, I mean, that line appears to be dominant. They just don't score. He spends 134 minutes with Lizotte, 81 minutes with Kempe. That's separated out for a total of roughly 70% of his minutes with one or both of those two guys on his wing. And when he's not with them, he's basically playing with Michael Amadio. Doesn't appear on the penalty kill, doesn't appear on the power play. So knowing all of that, Jim, heading into the start of the 2019-2020 season, what were your expectations for Austin Wagner?
Yeah, the expectations were to continue to pressure the opposition with speed, to continue to produce offensively, and finish off at, again, the word you used, expectation. My expectation, much like many people, because at this point, he's probably already established his finishing rate, and that's not high. It's not going to be high. I'm making the assumption and expectation that it will not be high. He will get the chances, but the finish will not necessarily be there. There's a lot of players who've had great careers doing that. Let me say solid careers doing that, where they're, you know, 10-year NHL player, skate like the wind, don't necessarily finish as much as their skill looks like they should. But at the same time, and I've talked to Austin many times about it, it's just when he has those chances, that means the other team is not getting the chances. And that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. But I did expect, again, if he could play the same type of minutes and have the 11 to 12 goal season, that is great for a fourth line player. Those numbers would be acceptable. So that dropped off, and that was not hitting expectations.
In 2018-19, his shooting percentage is 17.9, which is quite high. In 2019-20, it's 4.8, which is quite low. Now, in his first season, as you mentioned, he's on the fourth line, probably playing, you know, easier competition, fewer minutes, whereas last season he's probably playing tougher competition. How much of that explains the massive drop in shooting percentage?
That's a good question. I think, and this is, I would say, a very serious critique, and it just comes from personal experience. And I think people have touched on it and talked about it. Austin can be his own worst enemy. Mentally, he gets down on himself. And the reason is because he gets those chances, a lot of chances, and doesn't finish at a rate that, you know, would be come to the approval of a lot of people. I know there's many people out there who watch the Kings fans, who are disappointed in, you know, because he looks so great, he's skating, and everything, and then no finish. But whether he can get some help, I mean, this is with the mental part of his game, but he gets down on himself to the point where I think it becomes a distraction to himself. And actually, I don't know if distraction is the right word, but it's an issue with the team too. You can't spend time feeling sorry for yourself when the game's on. You got to play the game because before you know it, the game's over. And what I'm talking about is much easier said than done. But I think Austin has to attack that. He has to find ways to train his mental part of his game to continue at least through that 60 minutes with a positive attitude. And if he is disappointed in his own production right now, change something. Make a change. And if that change is a mental issue of talking to someone, how you reset your mind, how you get onto something a little bit more positive, I think that's what he needs to do. So that's, you know, part of this whole, I think you know what I'm talking about, because there's, again, the people, you see his skating ability and you go, oh, yeah, 50 goals, you know, and we know that's not going to happen now. But a player in Austin's category has to find ways to be more positive. He has to. Because if he's going to drag himself down, and perhaps maybe in the interim drag, you know, just for that split second, your team down a little bit because you're loathing about what just happened instead of getting on to the next play. That's, and as I mentioned, I think that's a very critical assessment, but that's what I see. Do I ever expect him again to get to that 20-goal mark? Probably not. But I still think he can be a very successful part of a decent team, of a good team, because when he's getting the chances, the other team is not getting the chances, and that's important.
Yeah, and to that point, if you look at the LA Kings, the only other line with more minutes played together is Iafallo, Kopitar, and Brown. So whether or not he's producing at a level that makes, you know, the average fan happy, he's obviously, that line is making the coaching staff happy, because they keep rolling them out there, and they are, you know, to your point, when they have the puck, the other team doesn't, and they have the puck a lot of the time. The actual goals for and goals against, you know, I said it's only a 38% goals for percentage, but if you, you know, over those, you know, however many games and however many minutes they played together, they score 5 and they allow 8. So at the end of the day, they're not, I mean, it 38% sounds bad goals percentage wise, but it's 8 goals against right over 300 minutes, basically, is pretty good defensive play for a third line. So let's focus on the positives of his game. You know, what does he do well? How is he contributing to that domination of that line?
I think he has improved in his own zone. And there was many times there he was playing his off wing at times and the puck's coming around the boards and you're trying to get it up. And I think we can remember glaring turnovers deep in his own zone that ended up in the back of the Kings net. I think he's worked on that part of his game, and I think he's improved there. So that's the recognition of what's happening around you. And then, you know, finding the right time to make the skill play and finding the right time to make the safe play. And I think he's come a long way there. So that's a good sign. He's taking the coaching, he's listening to the feedback, and he's applying it on the ice. Of course, his biggest strength is the speed. And believe me, that it does have a wearing effect on the opposition. Yes, they are getting to chances and they're creating chances, but they're also making, because of his speed, they're making the other team expend a lot of energy defensively. And again, in the course of a 60-minute game and the ebbs and flows and the momentum back and forth, that's important to keep that speed up. I think to a certain extent, now that people know him, the opposition is on their heels a little bit when he's on the ice. Because, you know, even though his finish rate's not that high, he's going to get the chances, and that makes the other team worry about him. They do. I mean, it's not like a Kopitar or a sniper, but it's the same type of thing where if you can get the other team worrying about you, that's a good first step. So that's it. That's just positive. And it's easy to see. And you don't need me to tell you that. But and I know they have worked with him. They're breaking down video on the finishing part. You know, the speed he builds up to create separation, but then how to slow the mind down to find spots on the goaltender. Am I a believer in teaching scoring? No, but I think the modern day athlete can change my mind. The modern day athlete does spend a lot of time looking at video, maybe breaking down that part of his game. So maybe the next time he gets that break in from the left side and he's got some room, he can slow his mind down, which will slow his hands down, which will hopefully make him a better finisher. So there is that going on, and there's a lot of work he puts in there. I see it daily, and I see him. Again, I'm going to go back to the same team. If he can train, you know, train your mind too, train that positivity. And I think that, you know, that could go a long way to help. So just keep, you know, we always say, work on your weaknesses. And I've told it before. I remember it's about 3 years ago now. Jack Nicklaus was in Montreal at the time. So, the Hall of Fame, best golfer of all time. And he was invited into the Montreal Canadiens dressing room to just meet the guys and talk to them. And he offered advice. He said, work on your strengths. And that really caught my attention. So that's, you know, Austin, keep working on your strengths. Keep working on that. You've improved in some areas. Keep working on it. And we'll see if it, you know, you get to the point where that strength is something you cannot turn your eye, turn your back on. It's something that everyone will have to see, face, and accept, and then you become a better and bigger part of a team.
So we mentioned turnovers, getting down on himself, and obviously scoring as some areas of his game that he could work on. Part of the reason I've picked him and our other player, Trevor Moore, this week is because Trevor Moore replaced Adrian Kempe on that third line with Blake Lizotte and Austin Wagner when Kempe began to play with Ferk and Velarde more, and they really didn't miss a beat. So Wagner's an RFA. They have yet to extend him, although I'm not sure they're even allowed to yet. I don't know with the altered schedule what the situation there is. But heading into next season, expectations for Austin Wagner. Do we expect to see a line similar to that, Lizotte, Moore, and Wagner moving forward this season? And where would his production be that would make everybody comfortable and happy?
Yeah, the production is double digits goals. Just get there. Maybe, I think players with his skill set have learned how to kill penalties. So if that becomes a bigger part of his game, then you have an element which, again, is a positive for your team. It's tough to see what happens with, you know, some teams go with their skilled players killing penalties. Some teams now are back to the old fashioned way where your role players kill penalties and you kind of save your skilled guys a little bit more. It just depends where you find yourself on a certain group of guys on a certain team. And again, the stage that team is in. He's done it before. Could he get back to that? I think it's certainly possible to get to the double digits. And again, continue to be that threat. Whether it finishes off or not, it does have an effect on the opposition. And, but, you know, Jesse, I think Austin finds himself in that category right now with the Kings as a franchise, as they're building. And now they're, you know, still in the development stage, still in the rebuild stage, but it looks like the foundation has been set. If Austin doesn't put up those numbers, does he get bypassed? Does he get moved over by some younger guys that, you know, obviously can't skate as well as him? But as we're seeing now with so many teams, and the Kings are getting to that point, even your bottom six forwards are fast. They're quick. They can play with pace. Austin can certainly do that, but now there's a group of players that are, you know, it's a pool of players now that are all going to be competing for that same bottom six area. And is it too early or too late, whatever way you're looking at it, for him to establish himself? And if he doesn't, does he get bypassed?
This question is probably better served for a different point in time, but I'll ask it now because you brought it up. With all the young players coming in, you know, obviously, I think everybody expects the top line, I follow Kopitar Brown, second line, some combination, Velarde, Furt, Kempe, maybe other players getting, you know, tryouts at different positions. And then you have this, right, ocean of prospects that they're going to be rotating in and out of the lineup. With guys like Clifford and presumably Lewis not returning to the team next season, would the team risk instability by breaking up that third line, whether it's Kempe or Moore with Lazat and Wagner? You know, they're not going to score a ton, but at least you know exactly what you're getting. Would they risk the stability of having two lines where you absolutely know what you're getting in the top line and then some version of that third line in order to work the prospects in? Or would they rather say, look, we're just going to, you know, the foundation, at least for one more season, is Kopitar Brown, Iafallo, Lazat, Wagner, and, you know, Kempe Moore, some splash of that. And then we'll experiment with, you know, the second and fourth lines, not perfect names for them, but I think you know what I'm saying. Would they risk that, or would they just go for this, at least the devil you know versus the devil you don't, for one more season?
Yeah, I think, again, because of the stage the Kings are in as a franchise, I think that the start, unless something dramatic happens at camp, I think, you know, Austin and his group, they're in.
Okay.
And have to play themselves off. But the Kings hope that this competition factor, you know, starts to improve the team from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you get your second overall pick, that should be a player that, you know, that's going to have an impact very quickly, not necessarily next year, but very quickly. You know, the kid in Montreal here in the playoffs, Kokniemi. I mean, you know, disappointing season, sent down. You know, yeah, he comes in the playoffs, comes back. You know, it's almost like, even though it's the same season, it's almost a year later,
right,
as far as maturity. And you know, he's getting some goals. He's in some traffic. He has the skill. You know, so that's – those guys, Austin and that group, are there. But I think the Kings are building a pool of players that are going to make it interesting. And that's up to the group to make it happen. I think we saw last year, and in our conversations about other players, you have a new coach coming in Tom McClellan. So the focus turns to system development as well as player development. And that's going to kind of go away. Now it's going to be up to the player. You're going to be, now you know the system. So no excuses there. Now you have to let your skill show through. Or you have to let your assets, the best assets you bring, those have to start showing through. And again, that's where that group is. And hopefully the Kings pool of those younger players do push and push and push and push to the point where all of a sudden now your bottom six players, you know, and that's where we've talked about it before and we'll always mention it. I'll bring it back through these conversations. playing on a team that is developing versus playing on a Stanley Cup contender are completely different, and where you fit and slot in are completely different. But until you get that pool of players that are all chomping at the bit and all having a chance. So six spots, 11 players vying for those six spots. You know, bottom six used to be, you know, a year ago, it was like, okay, you know who's there. Now there's going to be some competition, and that's a good thing.
Sean Tierney from Charting Hockey is here to talk to me about Austin Wagner. Sean, we just talked to Jim Fox, but what do the numbers say about Austin Wagner's season in 2019-2020?
So this is one of the more interesting ones we've touched on together. With Wagner, he had a really positive season in terms of quality shot share. He was about 55% in that expected goal share, and really drove play well, especially considering his spot in the lineup in about 745 minutes that we have from an even strength. Wagner was part of that really great Lizotte-Kempe line. They spent almost 300 minutes together. One of the good quadrant line combos. They had about one more expected goal for than against per 60 minutes, which is a really, really positive rate, especially over such a large sample. But the real interesting maybe story with Wagner is just how much he underperformed expectation individually. We have about 177 shots for him. He should have had about 14 goals based on his shot locations and quantity, but he came up with five. So he was one of the biggest underperformers of actual goals versus expected goals on the season. So a player that really drove play, but created a lot of chances that he ultimately didn't finish.
The previous year, I think he had double digits in goals. I'm not looking at his numbers right now, but this year, I know his shooting percentage dropped like incredibly. Is that the sort of thing that recovers during a career, right? He's not a young prospect, but he's still young in his career. We've got two seasons on him, one with great shooting percentage, one with terrible shooting percentage. Is that likely to regress to the mean, or is one of those a better representation of him, do you suspect?
I would say because we have two such different results for the player and he shot 4% this year, I would expect that he regresses back towards the average. So get him in that 7-8% shooting percentage range. And then if you do that, you know, you double his shooting percentage. Maybe you're looking at double-digit goal totals again, so a little more in line with expectation. For a guy that shoots from the spots that he does on the ice, getting sort of to the net front and the crease areas as often as he does, I would say he's a pretty good candidate to bounce back with shooting percentage because just a good area to get those shots from. So he looks to me like a bounce-back candidate, but you sure would like to see it first before you put it in the bank.
I've got sort of a philosophical question for you, and there's no real answer for it. one of the fights I have with people all the time is they say, you know, the point of hockey is to score goals. And I say, no, the point of hockey is to score more goals than your opponent. So it's important to have lines that are good defensively. Is the Lizotte-Wagner combo, whether it's with Kempe or Moore, is that line... I won't use the word defensive because they spend a lot of time in the other team's zone, but does that team prevent the other team from scoring enough to make up for the fact that they themselves don't score?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like that's well said on your side. They only gave up about 1.75 expected goals against per 60 minutes, which is below the average in the league, about 2.2 or so in that same amount of time. So it's like you said, you know, maybe they're not converting on all the chances they create, but they're one of those sort of, that was a line combo that you could count on to put out in your bottom six or in your bottom two lines. And you know that you're not getting scored on, kind of responsible players that aren't going to kill you in the time on ice they spend. And it was a big sample that we saw, especially from Wagner and Lizotte-Kempe. So it's the kind of group that you can lean on. You know, they're not going to kill you, and maybe the shooting percentages bounce back and you get some of that offense too. But the defense is definitely enough to turn back to that line in the role they were used in.
Excellent. Thank you, Sean. We'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks.
Not a shot. Fought off by Shesterkin. Trevor Moore circles the goal. A pass off of Wagner. Skate, he scores! Trevor Moore! His first goal as an LA King!
Our second player we're talking about this week is Trevor Moore. Joining me is Jim Fox. Jim, Trevor Moore joined the Kings late in the season. He plays 15 games for them, scores 3 goals, 2 assists, and 5 points. Plays about 13 minutes a game, plays a ton of time. with Austin Wagner and Blake Lizotte, but he also played a little bit with Martin Furk and Gabe Vilardi. When he was with Blake Lizotte and Austin Wagner, as we said, that line didn't skip a beat. 59.81 Corsi 4, 56.67 save percentage. Slightly lower expected goals for, 47.08, but slightly better total goals for percentage at 50%. So we've mentioned plenty of times before the growing number of prospects that the Kings have. Trevor Moore, as I said, 25, turns 26 in March. Good role player, does his job, but what were your expectations when they acquired him in that trade late in the season?
To be completely honest, I didn't have any expectations. Trevor is he might be one of the most interesting studies right now. Role player is a great description. And his skill level, we can see that he gets around the ice fine. All that is going to work to his advantage. But I didn't know what to expect. The thing that makes him intriguing to me is this. When I went back and looked at tape of him with Toronto, it seemed to me his role was elevated in Toronto. A team with what? Higher skill level, right, than the Kings. Higher skill level than a lot of teams. Again, you know, they're fighting right now to find the balance between the skill, of course, just losing to Columbus and all that. But a higher skill level, and he played certain times where he was, you know, I'm not going to call it top six, but he was that role player that was every once in a while fit into a higher responsibility. I think much more than with his short time with the Kings. So on a better team, he was playing in more impactful roles. I'm still not ready to, you know, we're not ready to recategorize him as an impact player. He is still a role player, probably always will be a role player, but just in the back of my mind, it gives me, well, Toronto saw something in him. They felt he could move up even for a short period of time. They felt he could play up a little bit. I don't know if we've had a chance yet to see that with the Kings. Back once again to joins a team that is still in the first year under a new head coach who's trying to figure out system work and foundation. By the time he joined the Kings, that was probably in place and ready. So it's tough for him to audition. You know, he's trying to find his place, new group, new system, new team. Very difficult. So all of my expectations were probably built based on what happened in Toronto versus what I saw in Los Angeles. And that's why moving forward is still very much a wild card to me.
I could be having this episode of Seinfeld wrong in my memory, but isn't there an episode where George Costanza tells people he used to date a model, and so then that makes people assume that, like, oh, well, he had a, you know, his previous girlfriend was a model, so if she was with him, then there must be something worthwhile. Mm-hmm. It sort of sounds like that's the principle you're talking about, Trevor Moore, where it's like, well, Toronto liked him, so there's got to be something. Sorry, I don't know why that.
And maybe the Kings didn't have, again, whether the Kings have the same plan for him that Toronto did, who knows? Certainly two teams not at the same stage of development. Toronto, of course, head of the Kings in that area. But, yeah, and again, to me, that's what I based all of my expectation on. Because when I saw him the first couple of games of the Kings, it was okay, you know, same old, which is fine. You're going to need those role players. You're going to need that. And probably an upgrade, right? An upgrade in skill. We can argue this till the cows come home. You know, I'm not saying Kyle Clifford was, you know, not a big part of, he was a huge, but the way the league is going, age-wise, skill-wise, it's an improvement. Would I have Kyle on my team any day? But Trevor finds him, and right, Jesse, Trevor comes in too, and, you know, is it a popular move? Probably not, right?
Not terribly, not, no.
It's not a you know, he's coming into a new group of guys, a couple of guys are leaving that have been fixtures. that's a tough, tough situation. And, you know, am I making too much out of that? Because, again, I don't think I'm going to ever say that Trevor's going to be an impact player or even a top six player. But something in the back of my mind tells me that he has more to show. And it's not because he didn't. He just found himself in a situation where, and I know Tom McClellan mentioned it a couple of times, you know, what do you want to, you know, for Trevor, what do you want to do? Well, he said, first of all, I want him to belong, feel like he's part of the team, because it was probably a very difficult situation for him. And just from looking at what happened in Toronto tells me he's got something more to give there.
So only 15 games in a Kings uniform, but what did you like in those 15 games?
I liked his pursuit of the puck. You know, not a chicken with his head cut off type of guy who's just all over the, just, he had a plan. He had a plan to what was going on out there. Kept plays alive, battle, you know, with skill. I mean, he has enough pace in his game to keep up. But, you know, I like the fact that he'd hang around, and that 50-50 puck, he's in there for it, and he's going to get it. And I think that was a very big part of his game. I don't think he has breakaway speed, if you could say that, but he has enough pace, again, to keep up. I think it's an upgrade as far as skill and, you know, the whole, you know, when you're talking, say, a 25-man roster or even a 30-man, you know, for the Kings, it improved their skill level for that type of a player who's going to play that role. So that's what I like about him. I just like his, you know, maybe getting from point A to point B. He gets there. There is not much wasted time. He's pretty efficient in that area. Is he, you know, is he a skilled guy? No, probably not. He's right on that edge. Like I said, when he moved up with Toronto there, he played with, you know, on higher lines. He played some time with some guys who could put the puck in the net. And again, that's the intrigue to me is, you know, can he continue to do the battle things that I liked? Can he continue to do that point A to point B that I liked? And at the same time, become a bigger part of a team, which it's a very difficult thing to do.
Again, only 15 games, but anything in his game during his time with LA that stood out to you as needing particular improvement?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think I ever looked at him and said, oh, he's not doing this well. Mm-hmm. I don't think I had that thought going through my mind. Very incomplete as far as the analysis right now. Wild card I used. He's just intriguing. There's a lot of things around him that still bring me back to the incomplete status. But no, did I sit there and go, oh, there's no way he's going to be able to do this or that? No, I didn't do that. You know, is he disappointed? No, nothing came up that way. So, and again, I think that's all part of the expectation thing where I really didn't know where to go with him. So in doing that, I didn't really notice anything that was blatantly going to say there's no way he's part of this group.
He's part of a real small group of forwards that have an incredibly difficult needle to thread. He's got one more year left in his contract, as I mentioned. He's 25 years old. And at the end of this season, when his contract is up, is the Seattle expansion draft. And as we've said time and time again, there's this wave of, you know, guys 21 and younger who are coming behind him to battle for roster spots. So going into 2020-21, what do we expect from Trevor Moore, and what has he got to do to keep a spot in LA?
Yeah, that's, you know, the age, it's a big part of what, and that's a good sign. The good sign is that the pool of players, the Kings are now just starting to develop, I think is, you know, it works against Trevor. It just works against him because now he's one of eight as opposed to one of four, you know, and that's, you know, what his age and contract now. No disrespect when we're looking at the big picture. If for whatever reason, Is he going to be protected? No. No, he's not. Unless something, you know, dramatically changes through the next year. If he is lost, if for whatever reason Seattle saw something in him that and he's got, it's not going to be this huge loss. It's not. So I don't worry about those types of things, but I think you are spot on in how you are categorizing him based on contract status, age, and role on the team. It could go either way. Again, what I've seen in Toronto makes me believe there's something there. I'm hoping this would be one of those deals where you get more than what you thought, because I think you usually get what you think, you know, not any more, not any less. And maybe this might be a situation where there might be a little bit more.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
We're talking about Trevor Moore, and joining me again, Sean Tierney from Charting Hockey. We talked about Austin Wagner earlier this week, Sean. Now we're talking about Trevor Moore, who I see as either a potential line mate or a potential replacement for Austin Wagner. What do we know about Trevor Moore based on his numbers from his brief stint with the Kings this season?
Right. So Moore is interesting, especially referencing Wagner, because it was almost the perfect flip of Wagner's individual results. With Trevor Moore, we had about 450 minutes of 5-on-5 time, and he was below average in creating expected goals for, but way, way, way above average in allowing chances against. So he finished the season at about a 45% expected goal share, really not good, and it was mostly powered by the fact he was giving up about 2.7 expected goals against. Again, that's one of the higher rates in the league among forwards. So definitely gives you some pause when you think about what he might be able to contribute in sort of a defensive role, especially without having a lead offense to offer in place of that. With the line combos he had, we have a few sort of small sample ones, but they reflected his level of play. We have a Wagner-Lizotte-Moore in place of Kempe line. They played about 50-ish minutes together. They got killed in terms of expected goal share. They're in the bad quadrant. Gave up almost one expected goal more than they created for themselves. So not a strong line combo there in terms of defensive results or otherwise. And then on the individual level, Trevor Moore kind of buzzed around and looked a little bit like he could create some offense in his time with the Leafs. We saw three goals with the Kings on three expected goals. So delivered exactly on expectation, shot 15, almost 16%. So expect to see that drop a little bit, but really did a nice job in a really small sample, about 30 shots, of getting to the net to create his chances. And, if he does that, maybe it's the kind of shooting percentage that drops a little bit instead of a lot. But a player with major defensive limitations that he wasn't really making up for offensively.
He's a little bit older in terms of being a prospect, right? I think he's 25. Only 15 games with the Kings, but we're pretty deep into his career now. Do the numbers paint a picture of what kind of player he is moving forward? Like, are we likely to see a different version of him, or is he just sort of who he is at this point?
Yeah, at his age, we know that peak for forwards in the NHL tends to be that 24-year-old season. And so anything from 24 to 27 years old for a player, you're going to get more of what you've seen at that point, especially for a player of Trevor Moore's overall skill level. So we're looking at kind of the finished product here with this player. So, you know, a player with some defensive limitations, not bad at getting to the net, but ultimately not a play driver. And so, you know, if you think of this guy going forward, is he somebody who could be relied on for heavier minutes? We don't really have a lot of data to suggest that he can. Kind of just an energy player, maybe a fourth line option that is cheap and maybe doesn't kill you, but ultimately not a player with any more upside at this point, as unexciting as that is to say.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you very much, Sean. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Crowd rises at Staples Center as Wagner picks up the puck on a penalty shot. He scores!